This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast.
Hi, Tanya. Did you have a good week?
I did. It went by fast, which is always a blessing.
Especially in January. Mm-hmm. Time goes by very slow in January in Michigan.
February is worse, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Even though it's the shortest month, it is the longest in our minds because winter just won't end.
It won't. Not in Michigan. Mm-mm. It's dark and cold.
I'm really excited to share this episode today.
I'm excited for you to share it with our listeners, too. Welcome back, everybody.
I was just going to say that.
To Tanya's new exciting episode.
So let's just get to it.
No chit-chat.
No chit-chat today. I'm ready to do this episode.
I'm ready to do it with you. That didn't sound right.
I know.
Sorry. You can see where my mind is right now.
Please don't do it with me.
Oh, boy.
Okay. On Thursday evening, May 14th, 1987, Mabes Martin, her full name was Maybelline, she was the owner of Showcase Models. She had set up an audition for a man going by the name of Mark Bloomfield at her modeling agency, which was located in Reno, Nevada. Mark was in his late 20s and was a photographer by trade. He had really dark black hair that appeared to be dyed, and he wore glasses. Mabes was 69 at the time and had owned her agency for a while. She was a very reassuring presence for her models, many of whom were young girls because she was just so warm and she had like a grandmotherly presence.
So they felt more comfortable with her around.
Right. That night, May 14th, Mark Bloomfield conducted the audition. Showcase Models, though, wasn't the first modeling agency that he had conducted auditions at. That week, he had been busy contacting several modeling agencies in Reno, in person and by telephone, and what he was looking for was some teenage models for an anti-drug video. And one of the names, I don't know if you remember, but do you remember Barbizon?
No.
Oh my God, Barbizon was big. It was like a modeling agency. I remember being in high school and like people auditioning for Barbizon. It was like all over the place, no?
I grew up in a very small town.
Well, I
we didn't have modeling agencies there.
I remember, though. Anyway, about 10 to 12 girls from Showcase Models auditioned, including 14-year-old Alicia and 12-year-old Monica. They did typical things like you would do in an audition. They read from cue cards about drug abuse. They walked around the studio. This audition was for a commercial that was to be shot at Lake Tahoe the following Saturday. So a little over a week later. The next day, Friday, May 15th, Mark auditioned girls at Barbizon Modeling School, and that evening he auditioned a girl named Jennifer, who was another model at Showcase Models. After discussing the commercial more in depth with Mabes, he discussed the drug problem, and he was looking at Jennifer's portfolio. He told Mabes that he wanted to shoot the video at Reagan Beach, which was about an hour away from Reno, and it's located in South Lake Tahoe, maybe about 50 miles or so. He talked about the commercial. He said he wanted the girls to bring very short shorts and a bathing suit. And she knew that Mabes planned to drive the girls to the work site. But Jennifer said she wanted to drive separately because she had to go to Sacramento that next day with her family. Mabes and Mark definitely opposed this. They didn't want Jennifer to drive separately. He wanted everyone to drive to Tahoe together and meet at a casino.
Because she's young, right?
Right. She's a teenager and she's got to meet her family. Mabes arranged for Jennifer to meet her on Saturday morning and drive with her to the meeting. Jennifer was kind of creeped out by Mark, and when she left the audition and she was standing in the parking lot, she noticed a large expensive car that she believed belonged to Mark, and she made a mental note of the license plate, and she thought it said TV Teen, T-E-E-N. Later that evening, Mabes called Jennifer and told her that Mark had changed his mind about wanting her in the video, and she wouldn't need to meet them the next morning. Mabes then called Alicia and Monica, and if you remember, Alicia's 14 and Monica's 12, and told them that they had won the parts and they would be paid $50 an hour. On Saturday, May 16th, the next day, Mabes told her son that she was going to drive to South Lake Tahoe with two girls to shoot an anti-drug commercial, and that her friend Dorothy, she went by Dottie, Walsh, would accompany them. Mabes met Alicia and Monica, then picked up Dottie. They drove to the casino where Mabes parked and the group waited in the restaurant for Mark. When he arrived, all five of them drove to Mark's trailer, like where he lived, in Mabes' car. The girls were told to go inside so they could change into shorts and to freshen their makeup. The two girls went in with Mabes and Dottie. Mark directed them to a room where they could change, like one of the bedrooms. The room had wood walls, and on the walls were pictures of models.
Like wood paneling?
Mm-hmm. There was a bed in the room, but there weren't any mirrors, so I don't know how they were going to fix their makeup in there. As the girls entered the room, Mark rammed Mabes and Dottie and threw them into the room, closing the door behind them. And he's in the room.
Where are the girls then?
They're in the room too, so now everybody's in the room together. He ran to Alicia and he hit her on the jaw with some kind of black object that was about 5 inches wide and 2 inches thick. I'm not sure exactly what it was. He then began hitting and pushing Mabes and Dottie in the chest and face.
Aren't they older?
Yes, they're like grandmother age, like 69, 70. He told all four to shut up and told Mabes and Dottie to lie on the floor so he could tie them up. Before Mabes got down on the floor, Mark threatened to kill one of the girls if she didn't hurry up and get down on the floor. He then used flex cuffs to tie the women's hands behind their back and to bind their feet.
He wasn't playing around.
No, he wasn't.
He was prepared.
Right? With flex cuffs. While he is restraining their hands behind their back, Dottie was completely terrified. She begged him for her life. So please
Hell
don't
yeah.
kill us, right?
Hell yeah.
And Mabes told Mark, just take us and don't hurt the girls. One of them, either Dottie or Mabes, told Mark that she would give him all the money that she had on her. And he said, oh, I know you will. Alicia even gave him the money that was in her pocket. Mark put a pillowcase over Mabes' head and a flex cuff around her neck. She asked him to loosen it, saying she couldn't breathe. She started to gag and fell over to the side from a sitting position.
She's running out of oxygen.
Yeah, she's running out of oxygen. Mark then ordered Alicia and Monica to lie over the legs of the older women. He used flex cuffs to tie their hands behind their backs and their feet together. He then put Alicia on the bed and Monica on the floor beside the bed. He put a jacket over Alicia's face and a pair of shorts over Monica's head to kind of blindfold them. Alicia could only see the carpet, and I'm thinking from down, you know, looking down. She heard a throwing up sound from Dottie. Monica heard gargling noises. Alicia then heard a dragging sound, like bodies being dragged. About 15 minutes later, she heard the sound of plastic bags being opened.
Oh.
Monica then heard the noise of dragging of the plastic bags and thought Mabes and Dottie were no longer in the room. Mark then returned to the room. He took the flex cuffs off the girls and he retied their hands in front with belts. He put a ski mask over Alicia's eyes and a pillowcase over her head, securing it with a rope around her neck. Alicia was able to see a red substance on the carpet to the right of the door, and she asked what he was doing at that spot. Mark told her that he had spilled Kool-Aid and was going to clean it up.
Okay.
Monica was able to see him scrubbing something dark brown on the carpet. Mark was wearing a plastic bag over his head.
What?
And his hair was black and wet.
Was he dyeing his hair?
Yes. Spoiler alert. He's dyeing his hair.
What?
I know, it's bizarre.
The hell is this?
I know, it's so bizarre, right? Can you imagine what these poor girls are going through?
I don't want to.
Mark told Alicia and Monica that he didn't want them and saying, quote, we wanted Mabes and I was paid to get her and I'll have to be paid extra for Dottie, end quote. Like saying maybe he was doing a hit on them, contract murder. Mark allowed the girls to take off the wrist restraints and blindfolds. He told them he might decide to hold them for ransom. He didn't know yet. When Monica asked him if he's going to kill them, he showed the girls a pistol with a silencer on it and said if he had planned to kill them, he could have already done it already. Alicia saw the door to the room had eye holes in it, like the door when you walk in had eye holes to
what?
See into the room from the outside.
Okay.
So bizarre. Mark gave them water, and after making them turn around and put the pillowcases back over their heads, he brought in some fruit.
Brought in some fruit.
Fruit for them to eat.
Well, isn't that lovely? That's so kind of him.
And water. Wasn't that nice of him? Later, Mark brought in magazines.
In case they're bored, they need something to read.
They need something to read. Alicia noticed there was an address label on one of the magazines, and it said that it was being mailed to a man named Herb Coddington, and she put it in one of her suitcases.
That's right, because she's untied.
Mm-hmm, because she's untied. Night falls. The girls end up sleeping overnight in this trailer. And the next morning, when they woke up, Mark/Herb, formerly known as Mark, so I'm going to be calling him Herb from now on, brought eggs and strawberries for the girls to eat, and he made them take vitamins. This is just a whole bizarre scene to me.
He wants them to be healthy?
I know. He let them go into the living room of the trailer. Herb was wearing what Alicia thought was a turtleneck with the arms over his mouth and part of his ears and a ski hat over his hair.
I can't even picture this.
I know. It's just so bizarre. The hair that she could see now was orange. So he had been dyeing his hair. Monica thought he was wearing a knit cap and a ski mask. She also saw the orange hair sticking out. He let the girls watch television. And as they were watching television, Herb said he was going to work out. He put them back in that bedroom that they were in, and he told them to change clothes so they could work out too.
Okay. That's what the shorts are for, I guess?
I guess. So they're in the room changing their clothes, and they heard heavy breathing as if he was working out. But I don't think he was working out.
I'm just saying. Depends on what he was working out.
He said he was going to take a shower, you know, yelling through the door, I'm going to take a shower. And they did hear, like, water running. He then let the girls come back into the living room, and he had them exercise to a videotape.
That is so just, oh, God, he's just a perv.
Can you imagine what these poor kids are thinking?
He's that guy. He's that perv watching girls work out.
And change, and a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. When they were finished exercising, Mark took them back to the other room. They refused Herb's offer of a shower.
Don't blame them.
But Alicia did use the bathroom to brush her teeth. And when she looked in the sink, there was some brown hair, like mustache-sized hairs, all over the sink. Herb told the girls that they were going to make a videotape to be sold in Europe with an 18-year-old boy that Herb's friends had kidnapped. So he's setting them up saying, we're going to make this video today.
One of the girls is 12.
I know. He told them they would have to take off their clothes. He blindfolded them, but Alicia could still see from under the blindfold. She asked Herb if he was going to rape them. He said no and added that if the boy hurt them, that he would hurt the boy, this 18-year-old.
So then what are they making, an exercise video?
I know. No, they're going to be naked.
What is this?
The girls were then put on the bed where they held hands. Herb then climbed onto the bed and began whispering to Monica. He had a microphone with him, and in his normal voice, holding the microphone, Herb pretended to tell the non-existent boy, this 18-year-old, to be gentle and to make the girls feel relaxed. So he's giving orders to someone who's not there.
But the girls don't know that.
The girls don't know that. He then put on a voice of a young boy, and he whispered to Monica that he was also scared and that, well, he didn't think they were going to be killed. The people had guns.
Just stop this. Just stop. So how old is Herb?
Herb is in his late 20s.
He's in his late 20s. He's pretending to be an 18-year-old boy that has been kidnapped and is now being forced,
forced
to rape for a video.
Yes. And that he was scared. And apparently there's just a group of people that are holding them.
Okay. Go ahead with this premise.
Herb, a.k.a. the 18-year-old boy, undresses Monica and kisses her all over her body, including her private parts. Alicia could hear, but couldn't understand that Herb was whispering something to Monica.
Herb/the 18-year-old boy. It's a little confusing with her being so many people at one time.
I know, right? Alicia asked Monica if she was all right, and Monica replied yes. After about a half an hour, this went on for half an hour, Monica said stop and asked to get dressed. Herb, the 18-year-old boy, allowed her to get dressed at this point. Herb then took off Alicia's clothes and whispered again in this young boy's voice that he was sorry, he didn't want to do this, and he hoped that they wouldn't kill him, they meaning whoever kidnapped them. He massaged Alicia all over her body and kissed her on her lips, breasts, and vagina. This went on for about 20 minutes, and she said stop. She heard Herb's voice coming from some distance, but there was still weight on the bed. It felt like maybe a foot was still on the bed. The girls were allowed to get dressed and go into the living room. Only Herb was there, and he's upset. He said the video was going to have to be reshot as it wasn't, quote, worth 2 cents, unquote, and no one was going to buy it because it's worthless. Like, we're going to have to reshoot everything that just happened. He promised to let the girls go home if they did another 5 or 10 minutes. He put them back in the room and again blindfolded them. Alicia now was put on the floor and Monica was on the bed, but they could still hold hands, which I believe they did throughout this ordeal. Monica heard a voice with a European or British accent.
Oh, come on, you're killing me.
She heard that person say the tape was no good and heard Herb respond that he had tried. I tried.
But it's no good.
The other voice said that he was going to have to reshoot it. So ridiculous. So they have to reshoot this video. Herb removes Monica's clothes and he put a finger in her vagina. She felt pain and repeatedly asked him to stop. The voice pretending to be the boy called out to Herb and Herb said to stop. So I guess he had to ask permission if it was okay to stop. He asked Monica if she wanted her mouth on him, and when she said no, he told her that she would have to keep doing, quote, it, which I'm not sure refers to the finger in the vagina or what, but I'm thinking yes. Next, pretending to be the boy, he took her finger and sucked on it, saying that was how to do it. Herb then put his penis in her mouth. She said she was going to throw up, to which he replied, why did you say that? Now you've ruined the whole thing.
Gonna have to do it again.
He told her she'd have to do more. She said she couldn't do more, and he allowed her to get dressed. Herb then put Alicia on the bed and told her that since Monica didn't do very well, she's gonna have to do better. She repeatedly said no, but he removed her clothes and put his finger in her vagina. She screamed for him to stop. Herb then said, well, don't use the finger. You're going to have to fuck her, I guess, to the 18-year-old boy. She screamed that he had promised he wouldn't rape her, but Herb got back on the bed. He put Alicia's legs over his shoulders and inserted his penis into her vagina. It was very painful. She told him that it doesn't fit, again asking him to stop. He then said, well, it doesn't fit. You're going to have to use the finger again. Like he's giving these directions. Herb then inserted his finger into her vagina, causing her a great deal of pain and some bleeding. Alicia could see, you know, I told you, under her blindfold, and she could see a red light in the corner of the room, and she believed that it was a camera, and all of this was being videotaped. Because he's a perv.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, he's a sick bastard.
Right. So when this is all over, the girls get dressed. They were allowed to watch some TV. They asked permission to call their parents. Herb told them they could tape their voices and he would play the tape over a payphone to their parents. He let them go to bed where they eventually fell asleep. On Monday morning, because that was Sunday, on Monday morning, May 18th, Herb told the girls that he was going to release them someplace and call the police so they could be taken to Reno.
Were her parents looking for her at this point?
Yeah, they were all missing. Because if you remember, Maves is missing, Dottie, and Alicia and Monica.
I mean, it was only a one-day shoot, wasn't it?
Right, yeah, it was only supposed to be that day. So they should have all come back. Herb told the girls to say that they had been kidnapped because he's going to let them go. He's telling them, once he lets them go, say you've been kidnapped and that you were taken to a blue two-story house in Sacramento.
Okay, sure, absolutely.
Whatever you want. He warned them that if they didn't follow those instructions, the girls' families would be in danger. He didn't release them, though. But good news, the FBI was now on to Herb.
Slash Mark. Slash TV teen.
Yeah, exactly, right.
License.
Slash the 18-year-old boy.
Because that's not a creepy license plate.
I know,
TV teen.
Right, TV teen.
When you're not into TV and you're not a teen.
Right? FBI agents and South Lake Tahoe police had been able to identify Herb as the suspect from composite sketches based on witness descriptions, like the girls that were auditioned at the several modeling agencies and employees at the modeling agencies.
Yeah, because you said he went to a couple.
Right. They ended up finding his address somehow, and that trailer was put under surveillance. So the FBI is watching the trailer. I'm going to go back inside the trailer now. From inside the trailer, Alicia heard the telephone ring. Herb answered it. And he said, what? My picture's in the post office. Then the girls heard a car leave. When he left, the FBI agents followed him. And they saw him enter a post office and look at the bulletin boards.
He already had a bulletin of him.
Mm-hmm. I guess he wants to see his picture at the post office. And at this point, his hair is like a glowing orange yellow.
So that won't stand out at all.
I know, right? It's just probably
that
looks like clown
really
hair.
Stupid move.
Herb then returned to the trailer at about 9 p.m. 3 minutes later, after he got home, an FBI agent received a telephone call from a man who identified himself as Herb Coddington, and he said he understood the FBI was looking for him, that a friend had seen his photo in the post office and said that he was wanted. The FBI asked, well, why are you wanted? And he said, quote, the kidnapping in Reno, end quote. The agent on the phone told Herb that he wasn't sure who they were looking for and would have one of the agents who had that information call him back. Herb gave the agent the phone number and address of the trailer where he was at.
Come on over.
Come on over. Even though I've got two girls that I kidnapped here.
And somewhere there's some elderly women.
Yes. Right. Right. Where is Mabes and Dottie? Exactly. That same day, whenever the girls asked Herb if they could leave, he only said, quote, let me think, end quote. He once said he would drop them off and call the police so they could be taken to Reno and that he was going to get a plane to Europe. He's going to escape that way.
Does this guy think he's going to get away with this? Because this is just ridiculous.
I know. This is just ridiculous. Later, Alicia heard Herb ask someone on the phone about, again, the picture on the wall. And Herb then told Alicia and Monica that they didn't have to worry because, quote, they found me. He told them to give him their clothing so he could wash off his fingerprints.
Hmm.
But by then, the trailer, which had been under surveillance, as I mentioned, was surrounded by law enforcement. Two FBI agents who'd been assigned to interview Herb knocked, and through the closed door, they identified themselves as FBI agents and asked to talk to Herb. Herb replied that he didn't want to speak in person to them and he'd rather talk on the telephone. Immediately, an FBI agent made a call to the trailer. Herb called to the agents outside asking, what am I to do? And they told him, well, that is a call from the FBI, so you need to answer it and do exactly what they tell you. Herb answered the phone and said there were people at the door. He was told the people were FBI agents and he should open the door. He told the agent on the phone that the girls were there and said he needed to go to the hospital. At this point, the law enforcement people are like, okay, we're not playing around anymore. So they broke into the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, he just told them that the girls were there.
Right, the girls were there.
What's he need to go to the hospital for? I mean, like, I don't know. Mental hospital?
I know, right? Right, yeah. One agent had broken a window in the trailer. They saw Herb through the window. They ordered him to get down, and they held him at gunpoint until other agents who had by then entered the trailer took Herb into custody. He was held at gunpoint, handcuffed and searched, and he said that he was sick and that the girls were all right. He also said that the women were in the back bedroom and that he had put them in plastic bags because he didn't want any, quote, messies.
Messies?
End quote.
Messies.
Messies. Not messes, messies, like he's four. The FBI agents found Alicia and Monica in the room, and it was actually a room that was built within another room. Its door was secured by a 2x4 that was used as a bar. Mm. So it was a room in a room.
In a trailer.
In a trailer. They searched the trailer, and they found the bodies of Mabes and Dottie in plastic bags in a bedroom, a separate bedroom, in the mobile home. Herb was then taken to jail. While he was being transported, he admitted that he had killed Mabes and Dottie, and he had already been given his Miranda rights, so he's now making this knowing full well it can be used against him. He again said he was sick and he needed help.
True and accurate.
Right? You are very sick. Under questioning at the jail, Herb admitted that he had strangled Mabes and Dottie. He killed them almost immediately after they entered the mobile home on Saturday morning because they had fought him and were too hard to control.
These old ladies.
These old ladies.
Way too hard for him to control.
Mm-hmm. He denied ever sexually molesting Alicia and Monica.
Because it was the 18-year-old boy.
Right. It wasn't him.
Being forced to by some European.
And he explained his behavior, which is, this is just bizarre, by saying there was just too many bad things in the world, too much smoking in the casinos, and too many drunk drivers.
Oh.
So that explains why you kidnap four people, murder two of them, and molest two of them. Okay.
I have a hard time with stupid people.
Oh, my God. This whole thing is just stupid.
And so I'm having a really hard time with Herb right now.
You're just like, what the hell? I know. That's how I felt reading this case. And I got most of the information from the court records. I was just like, this can't be real. But it is. He told the police at this point that he had strangled Mabes and Dottie with a cord that they could find at the mobile home. They asked him, how did he control Alicia and Monica? He said that he built a soundproof room that the agents could find in the mobile home. Again, he denied any sexual contact with the girls. During the time that the girls were kidnapped and being held at the trailer, Herb had called a friend of his named Michael. Michael was living in Minnesota, and they had met in Las Vegas in 1982. I'm just mentioning it because it's kind of an interesting
side note.
Herb was then a gambler by profession, and he had even written two books on gambling. Michael had an advanced degree in mathematics and had discussed the mathematical possibilities related to gambling with Herb. And Michael thought that Herb had a really sophisticated understanding of the subject. And Herb was really accomplished at counting cards.
Well, that's pretty amazing considering how stupid he is.
I know, right? He's book smart.
It's like a Rain Man thing going on.
In 1985, Herb moved to South Lake Tahoe, away from Vegas, but he still kept in touch with Mike. You're going to love this part. He once mentioned to Michael that he was a practicing clairvoyant and believed he could predict the outcome of the cards in baccarat. So all of his powers were related to gambling.
He's amazing.
He is amazing.
Just ask him.
Mike moved to Minnesota in 1986. Herb had called him on the telephone about 5 times after that. During one of the calls in either January or March 1987, Herb referenced, quote, the man in Philadelphia, end quote, to Michael, and this was a guy who had captured a woman and held her captive. Mike received the last call from Herb during the time that Alicia and Monica, as I mentioned, were being held captive, and Herb told Michael that, quote, I have something going on here, something like the guy in Philadelphia, end quote. Michael asked him, is it voluntary? And Herb said, no. Herb wasn't worried that he might be discovered because he said the landlord never came around to the trailer, apparently. I guess the guy in Philadelphia got away with it, and he mentioned that to Michael, saying, you know, I'm almost 30. This guy got away with it. Basically, this is what I'm going to accomplish in my life.
How's he know about that story if the guy got away with it?
I know. I don't know. You're right. When they found Mabes's body, which had been inside a garbage bag, there was a portion of the flex cuff around her neck. Her hands were tied with rope. Dottie's body was wrapped in clear plastic and then placed inside 3 garbage bags. And she had flex cuffs around her neck. And her hands were tied in front of her body with a rope. The autopsy also showed that there was bruising in Dottie's vaginal area and a tear of Mabes' vaginal area. So I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, because you said that he got rid of them pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. And had put the flex cuffs around their neck.
Almost immediately.
Yeah, almost immediately.
So, are we surprised by any of this?
No. So do what you would like with that information. There's no confirmation.
Necrophilia.
Yeah.
Necrophilia.
I don't know. Dottie also suffered a hemorrhage inside her brain from a blow to the head. There was a physical exam done on both Alicia and Monica. It revealed a recent bruise on Alicia's thigh and one on her cheek. There was some redness and engorgement and bluish bruising in the vaginal area. The examining doctor, though, could not identify the instrument that caused the injuries, but they were consistent with the insertion of a finger. Monica also had reddened tissue in the vaginal area. So there's a trial. And before I tell you about it, we're going to take a break. During the trial, Herb's defense finally conceded that he was responsible for Mabes and Dottie's death and that he had molested Alicia and Monica.
Well, there's a video.
Right. I mean, there's no denying the video. The only thing that was at issue was the degree of what first degree, second degree murder that Herb was guilty of. And his defense argued that the killing wasn't planned, which I find to be bullshit. He's got flex cuffs. And
a soundproof room.
And he pretty much set up the whole, hey, we're going to go shoot a video kind of thing.
In my trailer.
There was a witness who testified who knew Herb, and it wasn't Michael. It was this guy named Alan. And he would describe that he knew that Herb had done the card counting in Vegas. And he was there to describe Herb's basic personality. He said he really didn't have the ability to function under stress. So the card counting wasn't something that he continued to do.
He seemed to function just fine.
I know,
under
right?
the stress of the trailer. He was able to have different voices.
Right. And he started
characters.
Acting, yeah, he started acting weird, though, at the casino. And that's what really drew the attention of the casino, that he was doing something illegal with the counting of the cards. That was during the penalty phase. There was a sanity phase of the trial to determine whether Herb was obviously mentally sane to be able to be tried. And there were 3 defense experts that testified, and they all said that Herb was legally insane at the time of the offense. And they were psychiatrists, and one was a professor of psychiatry, but I'm not going to go into it because the prosecution ended up having 3 rebuttal witnesses to offer contrary opinions. There were some weird things that came out in the guilt phase.
I bet.
I guess in Herb's trailer, there was just hundreds of documents that he kept. There was just this huge volume of paper. Some of it went back to his school days. There was $10,000 in cash, and his parents did testify about his childhood. Basically, his parents were normal people. They did show videotapes during the penalty phase. First was a compilation of home movies showing Herb as a kid. The other was excerpts from films found in Herb's trailer, which included scenes of Herb with a former girlfriend and her children, and the part of a pornographic film into which Herb had inserted a clip of himself wearing makeup.
Oh, I don't even know. I got nothing to say for that.
So during the sanity phase of the trial, the jury returned a verdict finding him sane of all the offenses. During the penalty phase, they brought witnesses, obviously, to talk about his childhood. He was kind of a weird kid, surprise, surprise. And he was really very intelligent, too, but he never had close friends, but he was just kind of like an outsider.
Because he's a weirdo, because he's nuts. And kids could smell it a mile away. I already know. I knew people like him.
He was obsessed about his health as a kid. He was really against smoking and drinking, taking drugs or eating junk food.
So not against murder,
right? He would often say, like, those things are bad for you. All the witnesses they brought, they did ask, is Herb like a violent individual? And he was never known to be violent or even physically
aggressive.
Aggressive, right. While he was growing up, Herb was frustrated because he wasn't popular and some of the kids just thought he was a weirdo.
Because you're a dork. Squirrely little dork. I already know it.
Right. He'd sometimes be depressed and felt that he was a loser because...
He was a loser.
Exactly. That he really hadn't done a whole lot and he didn't have a girlfriend or a car. He just had a really low self-image. And I mentioned his family. He did have just a typical average family. His dad was a professional and he was a handyman around the house. His dad was quiet, but he was always someone that was available, like when you wanted to know how did something get done. So his dad was always there to help. His mom worked part-time, but she spent most of her time taking care of the house, raising the kids. They had a nice house. They had two cars. They socialized in the community. They went to church because church was very important to Herb's family. But Herb had objected to having to attend religious education classes, even in like elementary school. In high school, he developed an interest in the Mormon church, and he joined the Methodist Youth Fund because there were girls in it, and that was his way to meet girls.
He was a horny little squirrel.
I know. Herb had discussed becoming an attorney with one of his friends, but he dropped out of college, saying that high school hadn't prepared him to study for college. When he dropped out of college, this friend said he just did some weird things that he thought that maybe Herb was having a nervous breakdown. He shaved his head. He hung around wearing white pajamas, and he liked to act like a kung fu character. Then he just left town. That's when he moved to Vegas.
Bruce Lee needs to take it down a notch there, Herb. Come on.
Right. But when he got to Vegas, he found out that you had to be 21 to gamble. So instead, he joined the Marines. You know, that's equivalent, I guess. When Herb joined the Marines, he was promised he could sign up for the job he wanted, and he wanted to get into intelligence. But he was made a clerk typist, which really kind of upset him, and he felt cheated, so he went AWOL. He went home, and his father convinced him to go back. They gave him psychological tests, which then led to an honorable discharge as unfit psychologically for service. So they found out he was a weirdo. They did ask his parents, you know, why do you think he committed these crimes? And his dad was just dumbfounded. He had no answer. He couldn't explain it. His parents both said while they were testifying that there wasn't anything that they could find, like in his upbringing, that would cause him to act like this. And they were both unaware that he had been discharged from the Marines because of the emotional mental illness. So during that penalty phase, the prosecution, the only evidence they offered was just basically rebuttal evidence. And I won't go into all of it because, again, it's not important, but the jury went to deliberate and they came back and they returned a verdict that he was guilty of murder in the first degree for Mabes and Dottie, and he was sentenced to death. The court denied an automatic motion he had for modification of the penalty, and he had a motion for a new trial. They just denied that.
Dismissed.
But the story doesn't end there, because Herb was eventually charged with first-degree murder and sexual assault of a 12-year-old girl. This happened before.
Before? Mm-hmm.
Her name was Sheila Joe. Her partially clothed body was found in 1980 in a desert east of Vegas.
So how many years earlier is that?
This is 7 years prior to when he killed Mabes and Dottie and molested Alicia and Monica. He He ended up having teeth impressions of his teeth matched to a bite mark on Sheila, and a sketch of a suspect in Sheila's kidnapping slash murder looked exactly like Herb did at the time.
So there's 7 years in between.
Mm-hmm. And the reason the Las Vegas police decided to investigate Herb in connection with Sheila's murder was just it was really similar. Like the kidnapping and the rape of Monica and Alicia. I guess it was very similar. I don't have all of the facts regarding that. But Sheila had disappeared after accepting a ride from a stranger who was driving through her trailer park. Her autopsy revealed that she'd been raped and strangled. Herb was living in Las Vegas at the time of Sheila's murder. And he was found guilty and sentenced to death in her case as well.
So he's a serial killer.
Yeah, he's a serial killer and he's not getting out anytime soon.
Thank God.
I know.
What else did he do?
I know, right?
He did something.
In between when he killed Sheila Jo and in between, you know, the 7 years, he had to have been doing something.
Absolutely.
Had to have been.
I wish I knew.
I wish I knew too. But, well, that's her.
But torture's illegal.
I know.
So we'll never know.
Yeah. And that's my tale of Herb Coddington.
Well, that is just one twisted story. I mean, that is twisted.
There's so many
levels of twisting.
Just so many stupid things, like the 18-year-old boy that he was imitating. And
we're going to have to do it again.
Yeah, we're going to have to do it again. I know, sorry, my bad English accent, but
she got a bad American accent, too, so.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway.
Well, thanks for that.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. Before we go, please... If you haven't done so already, please hit the
follow/subscribe button.
Thank you, want me to help you with that? Yes, I couldn't think of the word real quick. Also, you can find us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram at TNT Crimes Podcast.
Yeah.
And you can also find out information. We have additional episodes that if you become a member on Patreon, you can have access to. We have like how many? There's well over 40. Oh, Talia, we have some shout outs before we go.
Let's do some shout outs.
Allison.
Allison.
Carol.
Carol.
Amy.
Amy.
Jamie.
Jamie.
Tammy.
Tammy.
Colleen.
Colleen.
Janelle.
Janelle.
Jody.
Jody.
Becca.
Becca.
Mike.
Mike.
And Jen.
And Jen, thank you guys for supporting us.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it so much.
Can't wait to see you guys live this Thursday.
I know. That'll be awesome.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's it. So until next time.
Bye, everybody. Don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.